everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. So much work these days. I am exhausted, but so happy. You know, the happiness of exhaustion, I think that you must understand what it is if you are a strong worker. It's very satisfying to be working hard, to be getting results from our work, and that's how I feel. If you know about fully dedicating yourself to tasks and working very hard, I'm sure you know that feeling. End of the line, Joel says, are we in the last few decades of the USA empire? Its borders are broken. Its soft power is gone. Its hard power is being kicked out of countries like Afghanistan, and client states like Japan want army bases removed. I tend to think that we are close to the end of the American empire, but not everything has been drained from it. There is plenty left to drain. So I think it will extend over many decades, not just one or two or three, but something more like six, seven, or eight decades still of the American domination. And that's in line with Philip Fabry's prediction. He has thought about the end of the Roman Empire, the end of the American Empire, and he thinks there is still a wave for American dominance that will stem from AI robotic research. So he thinks that because the US will have a technological advantage in these domains, the revolution of AI and robots will still allow a last breath to the American Empire, and it will still be dominant. So the signs of crumbling that you see right now would be just early signs, and you would have to wait still a couple of decades because America will recover from the current signs of decline. It will at least apparently recover, according to his prediction. And that would be the last breath of the American empire. It's when the robot advantage is lost to poorer nations in 70, 80, 90 years. I think I align with him. I tend to think that there may be a chance for even earlier crash, even earlier falling of the empire, if there's a combination of things that can happen. First, it could be that the robotic advantage will not be that great. It could be that it turns out, you know, just maintaining robots, maintaining all automated systems just cost as much as basically human slaves. That could be one thing. There could be the fact that maybe other nations will surpass us in robotic and AI research, perhaps an Asian nation, for example. And it could also be that the military conflicts that America tends to embed itself in become so costly and so long and so painful and so costly, like economically and in terms of effort and energy, that even the domination by robots on the market is not enough to keep America afloat. But and perhaps if we can have a kind of attack of the bureaucracy that goes faster than what we've seen in the Roman Empire, you could have a drain down of the energy of America very quick. Suffice to have a combination of various factors. First, the Jewish elite leaving America, pulling out their money, a rising bureaucracy with, rising cost, rising size, and more requests around affirmative action and equal hiring. And in the end, they end up with bureaucrats that do nothing. Basically, they spend their whole career being paid to be pregnant. All of these factors together can lead to a faster fall, I think, a potential faster fall than seven or eight decades. But you have to ask, what's the drainage capacity of the left in America? And will it be kind of stunted and slowed down by the rise of productivity due to robots? New guy says, no one pays me to be pregnant. No, you're a new guy. You're a guy. You don't get paid to be pregnant, sir. John Drake says, just the waterways alone make it special. Okay, and that was in relation to the state of California having farmland, desert, coastal ranges, and Mediterranean climate. Yeah, okay, they have all of this, but but they have they also have leftism. That's a problem. I see that Saturn Shines is on the chat. So Saturn Shines, yesterday I was trying to find your DM where you tell me what are your best days for the Patreon hangout. So if you want to lay it out right here on the regular chat, because I couldn't find, I was looking through locals.com, I can't find our discussion. So if you can lay it out right here, Saturn Shines, I will today schedule the Patreon hangout. What are your best days in the week? Kathy Halper posts about Jamie Lee Curtis. Right now, any day. All right, so let's schedule the Patreon hangout right now. Let's do Monday, because I have to do it outside of the usual window between the 10 and the 20, because this month has been insane. I've been accused of murder. I've been dragged down and smeared in the mud. So let's do it on the 23rd. That will give me a week to recuperate my energy for the Patreon hangout. So Patreon, subscribe, star, hangout on Monday the 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern time. That will be our meeting point. All right, someone has regretted a tweet that they've done and they've deleted it. And it's so fascinating. It tells you all you need to know about these concerns about the children of Israel. Okay, Jamie Lee Curtis posted what she thought was a photo of Israeli kids looking up at Hamas rockets and wrote "Terror in the skies" in Israel with the Israel flag. Then she learned they were Palestinian kids looking up at Israeli airstrikes. So she deleted it. If you are really caring about the suffering of the children, would it really matter if they're Israeli children or Palestinian children? It seems to me that, first, there's barely a genetic difference at this point between an Israeli Jew and a Palestinian Muslim. And children, you can know that a child of this age hasn't done anything wrong to deserve being airstruck. So whether you're on the Palestinian side or the Israeli side, does it matter? She had posted, and Lindsay Lohan had been liking the post on what is it, Instagram? "Terror from the sky," New York Times. Now, NTY Gaza Palestinian families, that's the description of the picture. NTY Gaza Palestinian families seek refuge with their children from the northern Gaza Strip to UNRWA schools inside Gaza City. Children are afraid of the sound of bombing who hear it during their presence due to the events on the Strip's border, according to Elouf, the New York Times. Well, you have to do your research when you want to take a side, because you will find yourself crying the sufferings that you induce yourself on the other side. And this is what Jamie Lee Curtis did. End of the line. Joel says, "JF, speaking of deleting tweets, Academic Agent retweeted Nick Fuentes, and then Academic Agent got embarrassed and deleted the retweet when he realized that it was Nick. More Academic Agent foolishness." Well, thank God I don't have to care about this, because I've blocked Academic Agent. That's too bad, man. He was a good guy. I respect him in every way. He showed up. He discussed with me many times. But when you write something like, I will not engage or talk with anyone who supports Keith Woods, that's extortion. You're trying to influence my capacity for research, my own capacity to judge what Keith Woods has to say, to agree with some of it, agree with most of it. And no, that is not a term for friendship with me. There is very little things that you can do to get me to block you on Twitter, but asking me for you to engage with me, I have to deprive myself of some other knowledge. You're already barred. that does not qualify. That is not the basis for a friendship. That is not the basis for an interaction. If you somehow suggest in your tweet that you don't want to hear about my tweets, I will block you. I will make sure that you live up to your promise, academic agent. End of the line, Joel says, Keith made a video critiquing some positions of academic agent. It was very polite stuff. Yeah, I mean, I've been in a back and forth with Keith Woods on idealism. And we were destroying each other and, you know, going hard on it. But that's no reason, because you disagree on a single subject. And Keith Woods tends to be a very gentlemanly intellectual. I'm sure that his review of Academic Agent was perhaps not right by the terms of Academic Agent. Perhaps he found issues with it, but certainly not disrespectful. Keith Woods has always been an intellectual ready to debate and to engage with contrarianism. Ali Mayer sends a super chat. Have you seen these shitbags, Rubio, Graham, DeSantis, dancing like circus bears to appease their overlords? I'm ashamed and embarrassed for them. Yes, and I don't have specific videos of these three that I've shown in the last few days, but I saw some of these videos pass on my timeline. I saw Ron DeSantis basically, ripping his shirt. And what was it? He was saying that he was so much more pro-Israeli than Trump. And it's always this re-raise that I'm more kneeling to Israel. No, I am. Just like they did with Ramaswamy. And no, I love Israel more. And wow, it shouldn't matter, this nation. It's a small nation of zero importance. Really, the only importance of Israel, the only inflated importance that it has, is that it pisses off everyone around it. It causes so much trouble in the Middle East that it ends up being an important point. But it's important in the same sense that the woman with the most bratty attitude in the high school is also the most important woman. It's just you're being a brat. You're annoying everyone. You are striking people. You are keeping other nations around you from developing. You are calling for war against the nations around you. You are bringing America into these wars to do your dirty bidding. That pisses a lot of people off. And there is currently people are looking at Iran. And Iran has said, if Israel invades the north of Gaza, we will intervene. I don't know to what extent it is serious. And a lot of people are asking me these questions these days. They're like, Jeff, there's something I don't understand fully. And it's, why don't the Muslim nations show more involvement? And I've given the beginning of an answer a few days ago on the show. The idea is, I don't think that Muslim nations, first, they're not super enthusiastic about having a bunch of extremely poor Palestinians just invading their nation. The mentality around Islam, let's not forget it. That first and foremost, Islam is a successful tool of conquest for brown people against brown people. And let's not forget that these nations that are today 100% Islamic, it's because they basically outcompeted and killed and dominated these regions where there were other people just like them. So first and foremost, the center of Islam is a mentality of conquest, of local conquest. And I don't think that they're very warm at the idea of immigration in these countries, not even immigration, because for you, a Palestinian is just an Arab, just like a North African, just like any Arab in the Middle East. And it's like, for you, it's all the same thing. But for them, I don't think they see it that way. For them, they had to conquer their land against other Arabic peoples. And they ended up dominating these lands, either submitting people to their version of Islam or killing them. So with this mentality of conquest, I don't think there's much warmth toward welcoming large segments of migrants. Secondly, I've already laid this one out a couple of days ago. Palestinian people have a strategic importance for a lot of Arab countries where they are now, but they have zero value if they were elsewhere. So you have to understand that this whole solidarity with the Palestinian people is gated by the need of these other nations to have something to go at Israel with. In other words, they are valuable as long as they're a victim of the Israeli regime and as long as they are inside Israel. But take the Palestinians and move them somewhere else, and they have zero value. They're not any more important from the perspective of Iran. They're not any more important than the Muslims in Azerbaijan or the Muslims somewhere else. They're just a bunch of Muslims that have no leverage against neither a military course against Israel nor a humanitarian one. Whereas as long as they're inside Israel, they have both. They constitute both a front of attack against Israel and a strategic place beside the sea toward Israel. Think of it a little bit as the enclaves that Russia left over when it withdrew from its war toward Germany. Russia withdrew, but left a single enclave there. As was presented here on this show by Semyon Ogog. They've left these little enclaves that constitute either forces of revolution in their country, or they constitute places that Russia has been hanging on to so securely that they were never decolonized, basically. That there was never enough of a pressure by Europeans to take over these little spots. And as Semyon Ogog had presented, when Russia withdrew, when the USSR withdrew, it left these enclaves such that they can close the shortest belt possible between Russia and the rest of Western Europe. In other words, these enclaves were strategically chosen as places of survival of Russian control for eventually a full affront with the West. Think of Palestinian people and think of Gaza as the exact same. I wouldn't go as far as to say that Gaza is a Russian enclave, but it plays the same role of a Russian enclave for Russia as it does for Iran. Because there was a time, more than a decade ago, the date I don't remember exactly, but there was a time at which there was a possibility that Israel would get kicked out by the war, what do they call it? The War of the 7 Days or the War of the Seven Countries, seven something. There's a bunch of countries who have ganged up on Israel back in the days, and Egypt was one of them. And at that time, it could have been the case that Israel gets fully kicked out. So think of the Palestinians as the last withdrawal, the 7 Days War. That was the name of the war. Okay, thank you guys. You guys collectively know much more than me about it. I shouldn't be the one only answering the questions. I think it's great that we answer them collectively. So from this war and from the relative squeezing of Israel into, okay, this is all you're going to get. You're not going to extend further in the north with Syria. Well, actually, they did with the Golan Heights, but eventually Israel has converged toward a place where it can't really expand more toward the north, can't expand west, can't expand east. And that has stabilized as the region that today is called Israel. But think of Gaza as this enclave that they couldn't expand toward ever, and that has always been in this state of survival. And there is no particular reason why Muslim nations would feel bound to service toward the people of Palestine, but they have a military and tactical use being there. So I think that what we've seen from Iran across the years is a lot of bravado. Iran, you know, you hear some things coming out from Iran, like death to America, the kind of things that the warmongers keep quoting and keep being happy about. But the reality is that the Iran, and you see videos of huge missiles. I mean, Iran is arming itself with big missiles that are very impressive. I mean, you see a human being beside the missile, and the missile is like a silo, enormous. Like Elon Musk's rockets, almost. But Iran does a lot of bravado like this, but we've never seen them do much, really. We've seen some acts of maybe piracy, and we've seen them being stricken by, you know, surprise drone attacks by Israel, and they didn't even reply. And we've seen them at times supporting just loose terrorist organizations that would, at a long distance, try to somehow attack American forces in Iraq and other countries that they were dominating. And you can say, well, here they are aggressive. But it's never been very tactical. It's never been impressive what comes out in terms of aggression from Iran. So I would caution everyone who are currently looking at Iran saying we will get involved in the conflict. I even read an analysis today that was indicating Iran is who stopped the progression of Israel into North Gaza. You know, because Israel has now announced that they're on a pause. They told everyone they would totally destroy North Gaza. Well, that's what people expected. And they told everyone to move out of North Gaza, but they didn't go in. And people were framing it as, oh, well, it's the warning of Iran that is giving a pause to Israel. I'm not so sure. I mean, sometimes I dream of, you know, a full explosion in this region, a full war so that we can get the thing resolved. I dream, oh my God, what happens if Iran just starts destroying civilian Israel cities? What happens if it starts nuking them? But the reality is, it's very unlikely. Iran doesn't have much power to do what it claims it wants to do. Israel is capable of some degree of defense, so not all of these attacks would even have an effect. And on top of it, there is the neutralization forces of America that are bringing their boat in this whole region now to get involved. So overall, I find the hypothesis that Iran is this super strong local power that could change the balance here. I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised. They have been shy. They have been bravado on the speaking, but shy on the action up to now. And perhaps that can change, but it's going to change only if the situation is fundamentally different. New guy says, Iran is all mountain, virtually impossible to take out. Maybe. End of the line, Joel says, Jeff, I have a great idea. Get Putin to give the Donbass region to the Jews, and the Palestinians get Israel, USA and Russia sign off on it, and two wars ended. Ha ha. I don't think that Putin will be very warm at the idea of having the Jews control the newly precious territories that he's acquired. I think that Putin really wanted Russian control over these territories, but maybe some change to your idea. Perhaps the Jews could live around Odessa and the southern place of Ukraine that is not yet conquered by the Russians. But then it's the question of Zelensky. Will Zelensky allow this? I can see the Jews being happy around Odessa. They have their access to the sea. They have their ability for whatever they want to do. Human trafficking, sex slavery, whatever you want to ship on a boat. I can see a lot of potential in Odessa. Valet says, JF cooks a meaner Putin than Vladimir. I was misunderstanding what you were meaning to say. A meaner Putin than Vladimir. I certainly do. I certainly do. Spindly Opinion says, why not put Jews on a southern Pacific island? They are capable enough to do what the Dutch did and reclaim shallow sea with dam and dams. Okay. I don't know what's the other word. Just in case it's a dirty word, I won't read it. But yeah, I mean, the problem is this is the eternal problem. And this is why we're in this situation. The Jews probably wouldn't be happy with these lost Pacific islands. And yet, it would be so good. It would be such a good solution. Just like Madagascar was the original idea for Israel. And why did it not pan out? Well, the Jews probably feel that they belong at the middle of civilization. And it's probably their specialty. It's probably how they evolved. For you and I can totally think of myself moving away to a Pacific island. You know, if it's what's needed to flee as much civilization as I can, I would do it. But from the perspective of the Jewish mentality, I don't think it fits well. I think the Jewish mentality is deeply interested at interfacing with the world. And that's why they are in the middle of fucking trouble right there. I mean, could you imagine a worse place to be in terms of being at a point of conflict of all civilizations? It's like you have the sub-Saharan Africans to your left. You have the white Europeans to your northwest. You have the Middle East and Arabs all around you at the proximal level. And then you have the Asians to your right. I mean, I get it that the Jews have been kind of specializing in international commerce and everything, but that places you at such a place where, okay, this is where commerce is kind of bad for you. This is where you are so much at the center of everything that you are also at the center of their hate and their desire to colonize. Go away. So, see, I'm a man of the edges of civilization, always. And I come from a line of colonizers that I've always lived at the edge of civilization. My ancestors in France lived at the edge of France. My ancestors who moved to Quebec lived at the edge of the European Empire. And I am moving away from Quebec by going at the edge. I will always be at the edge. That's where I'm happy. But the Jews, apparently, they have the contrary. They have the contrary, like, they are anti-frontiersmen. They are men of men. They are social creatures. They specialize in surfing the waves, not of nature, but the waves of men. As an artist, edge guy, I cannot believe this lifestyle. I wouldn't want to be that way. But that's how they are. It's a different brain, different way of life. Word sells, says DK Shadow. Word sells. I like this term. Frederick Von Finkel says, JF, do you agree with rating a commodity by its scarcity? If something is rare, it is intrinsically valuable? Well, no, of course, or else I could make up something that is worth billions of dollars right here. I could start listing, I could take a hard drive and fill it with random data. 2, 3, 7, 1, 9, 10, 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7. And it would be a unique hard drive in the world with a unique set of information that no one has ever written on a hard drive. And that wouldn't be valuable at all. It would be noise. So let's not forget that rarity is also noise. That within noise, you know, the screeching pattern of the analog TVs with the gray. There is something in this noise, which is uniqueness. There is some degree of uniqueness to where do you see a gray spot? Where do you see a black spot? It would change every second. Or every millisecond, whatever amount of milliseconds. Rarity in and of itself is not value. However, rarity in the presence of demand is one of the variables in the equation that leads to value. Because in the presence of demand, if demand is somehow significant enough to drain the supply, then you have a race toward higher price. But you need those two conditions. Rarity in and of itself, not sufficient. Rarity plus demand. Yes, Valet. Rarity plus demand equals value. New Guy says, our world has two basic types of people, the city folk who cling to society and the frontier folk who build it. Yeah, and it's too bad because the city people always end up finding where we have successfully built. I'm going underground. I think next time I'm going underground, I don't want to be found. That would be good. Like a place, a kind of Orania, a place that is inaccessible. You would have to decode a map to know where JF is, to know where the secret society I've established is. Just like in Leonardo DiCaprio's The Beach. That was good. Lucas Gage says, Mossad account posting a video game clip, Arma 3, to pass it off as footage of Iron Dome. Lol, lol, lol. Yeah, people have been sharing this video, but I've not been including it in my show because I was finding it way too perfect. I was like, this cannot be an ongoing event. I didn't realize it was a video game, but I was like, this must come from some kind of practice run of some sort. Because you see basically lasers. And Israel Mossad was claiming the new Iron Beam in full display. So I was like, lasers, really? Lasers in Israel attacking missiles like this and making them blow up? But yeah, the above footage, according to community notes, is from the computer video game Arma 3. A realistic war and military simulator, the footage is digitally altered, cropped, and resolution lowered to appear more realistic. Well, we're getting so much fake news on the side of the pro-Israelis. It's stunning because the Palestinians are winning the social media war. And they're doing so apparently without training because you see how the American females have went into Ukraine to teach social media. That has happened. They presented it in Oliver Stone's documentary, how there were agents that were paid in America to go teach Ukrainians how to win the social media war. And that was before the war blew up. That was they were training them initially to basically take over democracy in Ukraine through persuasion and that kind of stuff. But eventually their training transferred. You can see that the Ukrainians have tried hard to win the war against Russia on social media. The NAFO sisters says go away. Yeah, these people are a perfect illustration of the fact that there are major efforts being deployed to win the Twitter war. But I don't see this being successful on the Israeli side. And yet, we have plenty of video coming from the Palestinian side, almost sometimes confirming that there's more evidence for the claim of Israel on the side of Palestine. And Palestine hasn't even claimed it. Like the beheaded babies started as a claim on the Israeli side. People started demanding evidence. Israel couldn't give evidence. So they sent this picture of a burnt baby. And then another dead kid, but that wasn't a baby and wasn't beheaded. And then, you know, Palestine publishes so much video that we actually have examples of Palestinian kids having had their heads blown off by Israeli airstrikes. So that's a weird win, you know. Palestinians have not even claimed that there were 40 beheaded babies or anything like this, but they did have beheaded babies, as it turns out. And we see they are winning also with the hostage videos. You see these Hamas guys just taking care of babies, just pushing the cradle. and it gives a whole paternalistic human perspective that I don't get on the Israeli side at all. Alimer says, you have a problem, JF. Your show isn't being shown in the feeds of your subscribers. The only way to get here is to manually find your channel, and that's not necessarily easy. Well, people have been complaining about this. I don't know, because I'm not a man of feeds. And it's like, yeah, if you want to watch Papa JF, I'm here every night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. If I'm not here, you will see on my Twitter account, I will announce it in advance. If you want to stay up to date and you want to be reminded, join the Discord server. You just have to leave a window open in the announcement section. You're going to know every day that I'm going live, when I'm going live, and generally it's going to be 7 p.m. Eastern time. But the feed, I don't know. Is that an error? Is that how the feed is intended to work? I have no clue. Jewish pundit Mark Levin threatens Samson option if America doesn't supply Israel with weapons. I think that this description that he's calling for the Samson option is not super clear. Because the Samson option is this whole idea that Israel has nuclear bombs and that if they can't live, if they see that they are stuck in the corner and that there's really no solution for them to win a war, they will destroy everyone. And, you know, you can think of it as they will destroy the whole planet with nukes, or they will destroy maybe the whole Arab world. It's not clear what they will do as a when they push the button of the Samson option, but that is the idea. I'm not sure this is exactly what Levin is saying, but what Levin is saying is certainly very unhinged.
That on the table of debate now. What are they going to do if they're surrounded? What are they going to do if 150,000 advanced missiles are going to be shot? What are they going to do if Iran gets involved? Well, they can't win a conventional war. What are they going to do? I think I know what they'd do. I know what we would do. We would destroy the enemy, because otherwise we're exterminated. That's all I have to say.
Well, Mark, you brought up nuclear war, I mean, essentially. And also, we're talking about America's involvement and how as
no,
this expands.
No, we're not. No, we're not. No, we're not. If you drop, look.
Mark Levin is losing his cool on this one. This guy tends to be super calm, but he's becoming extremely disrespectful of the audio stream here. I want to hear what she has to say, but no, he's already undercutting her.
Sorry, Hold on.
Yeah. Rachel, when you ask questions like that, you need to answer them, not just ask them. What are they going to do if there's multiple front war? What are they going to do if they have kidnaps or hostages and other hostages? What are they going to do? Die, I guess.
We had a general on earlier in the show who said that our military is not doing well. You know, recruitments are low. They're not focused. He described a military.
Oh, he's always hysterical. Well, I don't know. All I've seen from him are interviews where he's very calm. So I haven't seen his hysterical content.
Terry, that's not prepared in many ways. And yet, there we are in Ukraine. We could have another front here. China's on the move. I mean, this has to be, we have to pause and think a little bit here.
Because it just sounds like a roll towards war. Honestly, I don't know what you're talking about. What does Ukraine have to do with this and China have to do? I'm talking about...
It's an important point she's making. You cannot just analyze the situation of Israel as an isolated event. The fact that there is an ongoing conflict in Ukraine is extremely important. It's extremely important for Israel, and it's extremely important for the U.S. because the U.S. is stuck in there. And it also determines a lot of the Russian interest in this conflict. It's absolutely tied. What she brought... For once, we have a woman bringing the relevant points in a political conversation, and we have the men trying to flee away from it. That is very transparent.
The Israelis are going.
I'm talking. Well, you're. But you're. I the Israelis have their issue, but I'm concerned that a lot of the talk that's going on now is about involving the United States. And that's another matter. And it's not anti-Semitic to say that we as Americans should take a pause.
Okay, look, I didn't say it was anti-Semitic. That's number one. So I don't appreciate that either. Number two, the Israelis haven't asked us to get involved. They asked us.
We are involved already. First, we are involved mediatically. We are involved because our whole mediatic mainstream class has somehow decided to go full irrational support of Israel. Secondly, we are involved because we're sending boat carriers. We're sending aircraft carriers right in this region. We're doing this precisely to use them. And we're probably doing this to form a force of intimidation against anyone who would try to stop Israel from genociding the Palestinians. So we're the helping uncle of the Palestinian genocide. That's where we're at. That's our current position in the Middle East.
To give them equipment. Number three, they have their own arsenal, which they never admit. So while you bring up all these issues...
So he's bringing the idea of nuclear bombs being owned by Israel
to me, which kind of fogs precisely. You're the prime minister of Israel. You're about to send hundreds of thousands of your troops in to take out the enemy once and for all. We saw the slaughter that took place. He's not thinking about Ukraine or China, neither are we. And I'm saying
we are. It's very important because it's the same phenomenon. It's the whole tension between a Western axis and another axis. And this other axis turns out to be Russia, Iran, Palestine, to a certain extent. Although normally we wouldn't mention Palestine as part of it, in the end it totally fits in this axis. It's just a small point. It's a small point in a larger graph.
I'm saying to you this, I'm telling you the truth. Sometimes it's tough.
Well, your truth is not tough. It's just that you are escaping important points of analysis that are being presented by the lady.
Israel is going to face annihilation. You think they have those nukes in there to collect dust? I'm not even encouraging anything be done. I'm not even saying nuke them, nuke them, nuke them. I am saying Iran needs to understand, and Hezbollah needs to understand, that if you think you're going to wipe out these people, you're not. And so we have to deal with reality. And reality is, but America's involved in this. America, I said they're going to drop them. In my opinion, they might. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm the only one bringing this up. I'm not even encouraging it. But if you're a country that has that kind of weaponry, and your people are going to be slaughtered as they were, except this time totally destroyed, they need to be thinking about all their options. And my guess is they are. I don't know. So when we go on TV and say, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? They're surrounded. They're going to wipe them out. We can't send troops. We can't. Fine. But if I'm the president or prime minister of Israel, I got to think it all through. All of it. As far as the U.S. military being stretched, that's not Israel's fault. It's nothing to do with Israel.
Look at him. Defending Israel. It has nothing to do with Israel. Wait a minute. The entire involvement of America everywhere in the world for the last 40 years has to do with Israel. They have determined from the moment of 9/11, certainly, all wars undertaken by America have been in some form at the request of Israel or for the interest of Israel. So the current state of the American military is largely influenced by Israel. Not to mention that Israel controls our politics and that foreign interests are totally controlling both parties with donations.
And it might be nice if we actually started to fund our military too and not treat it like it's some secondary agency and put a 19...
Oh, and here we go. Let's throw more money for a military that will only serve one cause, that of Israel.
Percent increase for the EPA. We have a lot of problems in this country.
This guy presents himself as a guy who doesn't really care I mean, I'm not even encouraging one way or another, but let's throw money at this system that has been serving Israeli interests for the last few decades.
A lot. But that's not on the head of the Israeli people who are trying to survive. Yeah. I'm done unless somebody else has another question.
Now, Mark, it all underscores the violence and the threat that has been brought to us when we look weak, which I know we can all agree on in that context. And Israel's got to do what it's got to do.
Even the pushback people in this conversation, Israel has got to do what it's got to do, you know. I don't care what Israel does. I mean, I can imagine myself if I was the president of Israel, but they do whatever they want. I'm not pushing one way or another, but they got to do what they got to do. This is per Israel cookery disguised as political analysis. I mean, like, you guys are talking to American audiences. Why don't you have something American about your analysis? Why don't you talk about the people who are listening to you? You're not being listened to by Jews. I mean, Jews are too small of a population to form your audience. Unbelievable. The only difference between this and the Ben Shapiro's of this world is the sugar coating. They're sugarcoating it in displays of, I don't care. I don't care because, you know, it's not my thing. But, yeah, I can imagine that this is what they will do. They have to do it. Oh, yeah. And they get so emotional about it, you know that they care. It's impossible for Mark Levin to not care about the outcome here when he gets so emotional. I know what it is to not care about something. And let me tell you, when you really don't care about something, you don't raise the voice like this. It eventually touches your heart. I see that we have someone in the waiting room. I had made no appeal for calls, but he seems to have taken the initiative of joining the waiting room. Hello, Rug the Communist. Are you there?
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Or is it Rug Communitarian?
The Rug Communitarian.
Okay, Communitarian. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. What did you want to talk about tonight?
Okay, I have three short questions.
Go ahead.
So the first one is about a book that I came across that was recently released. It's called The History of the Next Century, and I think you translated it, and I'm not sure if you spoke on this book before. It seems interesting.
Yeah, I talked about it a couple of times because I translated it. This is a book, yes. a genius book written by Philip Fabry, and someone of our audience was so fascinated at my passion with this book, he said I would like to read it in English, and so we end up having a version on Amazon that is English of this book, which I wrote, which is History of the Next Century. Did you read the book?
No, I haven't read it. I just came across it, and it seemed interesting.
Are you an African American?
No, I'm not.
Okay, because your fire alarm is chirping.
I don't think so.
I think so. I think it's undeniable. Everyone has heard it on the chat. I believe that your fire alarm is indicative. Have you done a 23andMe test?
Yeah, I'm 100% European.
100%?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what to say. I didn't expect this tonight, but your fire alarm is chirping.
Okay. I'll try to move to another room. Maybe that'll help. I have two other questions.
Yes.
So my other question is, so Rumble seems to be like very, very popular.
Rumba?
A very popular alternative streaming service. So I was wondering if, why you don't post on there to gain, a bigger audience?
Well, I've been turned off by a lot of what's written on their website. They were trying to say that you have to pay per month to have these services and you have to pay for bandwidth, but I'm not even sure anymore because I streamed on there and I didn't see any sign that I had to pay anything. So I streamed recently on it. It works, but still, if I multi-stream, I still have more audience here than I do on Rumble. So maybe one day I will expand and try to develop Rumble, but as long as Odyssey is working, Odyssey has been very satisfying from a free speech perspective. And so I'm sure that Rumble is also good, but I just, when you choose one platform, and when I did my choice back in the days, Rumble wasn't ready for streaming, and Odyssey was. Mm. There's also the question of super chat rates. Odyssey takes something like ridiculous small amount of fees, like 3 or 4%. They basically just pay the credit card fees and the rest gets to you. Whereas Rumble takes 20%. Now, it's viable. 20% works. But it's sad that someone would send a $500 super chat and really they're sending $400 to me. So those are things to consider. But when it works and when the service is good and when they have been loyal to this idea of free speech, I don't see why we would change. And on top of it, the looks of Odyssey is simply better. The platform of Rumble kind of sucks, honestly, in terms of boomerism of the layout.
Okay, that makes sense. And my last question is... my question is, what is your argument again against homosexuality or promoting LGBTQ? It's that it promotes non-reproductive behavior, right?
Yeah, and basically that we are machines to make babies. We are much more likely to we are made to make babies. Everything that's part of us has been evolving to make babies. And when you don't make babies, you will be faced with an unaccomplished form, unaccomplished function of your biological self that was totally the ultimate function of it. So no matter what you have, a brain, legs, heart, lungs, everything has evolved because it was helping you reproduce. To be denying this function just for a life of hedonism in non-reproductive sex is ridiculous in my view. So it's against the interest of the person, in my view. It's associated with so many things, like there are increased STDs. It's a lifestyle that if you were to choose it, if you were to kind of buy a pack, rather than a pack of cigarette, if you were to buy a pack of gay, there would be a label on it that says dangerous. You know, you're going to have monkey pox up your ass. And there would be pictures of the monkey pox. So for these reasons, I say it's not a good lifestyle for the person themselves. And on top of it, it's a betrayal of the kind of contractual commitment that we have with past generations. There are people, there are families who, for one reason or another, end up having just one or two babies. If they lose one or two of them to homosexuality, they end up losing their line of descent. So it's especially important in a society that doesn't have large families. It's particularly important that each baby's be put on the track of heterosexuality, or else there are lines of descent that just disappear from the earth, where the one child is your one hope to have babies and somehow they don't do it because they become gay due to modern propaganda and modern context of all kind that are detrimental to the genetic ability to tell a whole from a penis.
Okay. Thank you. Right. I appreciate your work, analysis and commentary.
And my recommendation to you tonight as a doctor, fix your fire alarm chirp. It is associated, it is correlated with extremely high rates of murders, of various crimes that can happen to you. The correlates are very clear. People with a fire alarm chirp end up dying from murder much more often. So get this resolved as quick as you can.
Why is that?
I cannot. I kicked him from the. I cannot give this answer. Sorry. You're going to have to do the research yourself. Oh, God. by the way, I've not been generating clips on my Twitter for a couple of days. It's just because I want to take a break. And also because when I do clips, it's like one more layer of work. And I'm feeling relaxed these days. I want to relax with you guys and have fun. And perhaps that kind of loose moment is the kind that may end up in a clip. But I mean, if Lorenza wants to do clips about these moments, so you go ahead, Lorenza, because I've taken basically a 1 week break of clips. And that's just, it's not that it's long. It's like a 5 minute thing after my show, just sliding the videos onto Twitter. But I've decided that I was taking that 5 minute for myself. So if Lorenza or any of you want to clip, I think I will be back on the clipping maybe on Friday. But yeah, he was a cool guy, but he didn't understand my, of course, communist, communitarian. The guy who just called us, I was joking with the chirps. It was a joke as a reference to the meme that goes on the internet about people having fire alarm chirps and correlates of this reality. Almost a decade since the David Duke interview, Alex Jones is a tough student, but he can learn. You'll remember the interview of Alex Jones of David Duke. There was a David Duke here trying to tell Alex Jones, listen, you're doing good stuff. It's good, this attack against the globalists that you do, it's all good. But you have to learn to name things by their name. And if there is a social phenomenon that is reliant on Jewish culture, you should point it out. You should not wrap it in sugar. You should not say, oh, well, it's not really the Jews, but it's people who control the Jews. And even as to recently, Alex Jones wasn't able to truly address the question of the contribution of Jews to our culture directly. And he had made up this whole conspiracy theory where, oh, you know, it's not really the Jews doing this. It's people who are trying to scapegoat the Jews. And these people are the globalists. But when you look at his new take here, I think it has finally entered his brain, his thick cranium. It has finally entered that, yes, you're going to have to talk about things in a way that is real. And I think that this whole war is kind of falling, this whole Israeli-Palestine thing is falling kind of at a special moment of civilization where we can get people like Alex Jones, who would before have been shy to use the term Jews to point to the contribution of Jews to our culture. Now they can do it because everyone knows that Israel is a Jewish nation. So suddenly he finds the courage to do what David Duke tried to tell him about 10 years ago.
Done nothing to Israel, deserved to be persecuted and attacked like Hitler did in the beginning. Deplatforming, putting us in ghettos, lying about us, demonizing us. We can't take the news saying white people are terrorists and Christians are bad people. And you're like, well, we're not doing that. The point is, if you speak out against it, people will listen.
That is something I've been wanting to say for a long time. Because I understand it's not all Jews that hate white people. I understand. What I dislike about Jewish behavior on this question is that you guys are often silent when some of your fellow Jews are expressing hate against white people. People like Brett Weinstein. It's not that they will they will do explicit hateful statements against all white. But it's that they let these statements go onto the public space and they say nothing about it. And in fact, they tend to criticize the pushback against it. They will criticize white identitarianism. They will criticize people who have Nazis in their audience. Because you are silent on the issues of hate, and because you are pushing back on the pushback against hate, there's a lot of people who are starting to be annoyed. And now Alex Jones even has noticed. There's a lot of people who are like, hey, why is it that you're always silent when the hate comes our way? And then you are bashing us when we reply. You're bashing us when we develop a white identitarian strategy in response to the hate that's being directed at us. And Alex Jones here is laying it out for the first time I've heard it that clear. He's saying, if you were to just say something about it, if you were to just say, if I could find 10% of the public Jewish intellectuals putting right now tonight on their Twitter account, don't hate white people, at least it would give me something to hang to. But the silence is deafening. The silence is terrible. And that is the spirit of what Alex Jones means when he says this.
Terrorist and Christians are bad people. And you're like, well, we're not doing that. The point is, if you speak out against it, people will listen.
Yes, I'm ready to listen to Jewish people. People like Frame Games. Who tell me, yeah, you know, that there's something totally unjust in the way we let rampant anti-white hate invade our societies. If I could have just a handful of Jews saying this, that would do a lot of good to you guys.
My grandfather stood up for the Jews. Both of them almost died of the Army Air Corps. And I don't claim you owe me some debt, but at the same time, I don't owe you anything. And I am tired of being attacked. And the white supremacists make a joke, oh, Jones pleads to his masters. I have been a friend to Israel. I have been nice. But it's time for Jews, particularly, to choose a side. Are you with the West? Are you with right to self-defense? Are you against communism? Or do you embrace those tenets? And if you embrace communism and disarmament and enslavement, then go and get killed. I'm not the one killing you. Go kill yourself. Take your children with you. I'm sorry you're going to get them killed too. I'm not saying I want your kids killed, but your bizarre behavior is causing this. Let us control our countries.
Wow. Wow. That is powerful messaging right here by Alex Jones.
And stop them coming here. Don't have the ADL attack me. Don't you point your finger at me trying to survive and live and say I'm the bad person. I reject that. And I'm sick of you opening our damn borders up to bring all these people in and brainwash them against us because I'm white. I'm not a person that's in identity politics, but you've made it that way. Everywhere it's bad because I'm white. Everywhere it's bad because I'm Christian. Everywhere I don't deserve to have a job because of what color I am. Everywhere I'm a bad person. No!
Wow. This is the message that a lot of people who ended up being called alt-right had to say. That's it. And this is said so beautifully by Alex Jones. I must just kneel. And yes, Dino Rogovich says amen. That is wow. That is what needs to be said. And it needed to be said since 2017. And that's why people like me have been saying these things since 2017. But it's good to see an Alex Jones, who has always been recalcitrant, to say these things. That is the exact position that I have. It's not hate. It's not hate to say this. It's that either you're a communist or you're not a communist. But if you're going to ask for me to respect your right to exist freely, you're going to have to start making space for me to live freely too. You're going to have to start to always be against me or be silent while your co-ethnics are bashing on Toomey. There is a lot of work for the Jews to do before we get to that place. Because I have seen Jews who previously were bashing onto white nationalism, white identity, and who today are showing themselves to be bigger identitarians than the very people they've criticized. That is the great lesson of the current moment. And unfortunately, it's a lesson for the Jews. And they are not necessarily on the path yet to integrate it very much. Israel media says that the Gaza operation was delayed on fears of Hezbollah full assault in the north. Hamas issues a hostage video. So yeah, those are speculation around why is Israel waiting. My personal belief is that Israel has underestimated and was surprised by the public mediatic feeling of the crowds, and that they had not, they thought that they would have a all clear path to do whatever they want. They thought that the initial aggression was seen as so grave that they could do anything they want, and they've realized, oh no, there's not so much support. I believe that there's a lot of pushback on the social media that have made Israel think twice about doing too quick, too severe of an attack against basically a civilian settlement. Yes, perhaps the Iranian threat has played a part. Yes, perhaps the presence of Hezbollah and their capacity to eventually come into the back of the Israelis and make their ground war extremely difficult. All of this may have played. But first and foremost, I think that Israel had not realized how even if you control the media in 2023, it's not enough because the media is uncontrollable. The media has too much decentralization elements to it. And so we're seeing restraint here where there wouldn't have been restraint, I believe, 40 years ago. I believe that 40 years ago, they would have seen the mediatic milieu as being fully conquered and they could have done whatever they wanted and it would have received positive coverage in the controlled media. But in the world of 2023, it's not enough to just own a handful of big guys on the news. You have to own Tim Pool, you have to own Papa JF, and you're never going to own these guys. So it's a much harder task to dominate the narrative. And so I think that they're designing perhaps a softer plan, perhaps realizing that we cannot let negative media images of what we're doing here come out all the time. And so we cannot just enter in and shoot everyone and destroy every building. A new guy says they will inoculate the internet against fake news soon. Is that the Great Reset Project of Schwab? Is that what it is? And finally, as a last news item for tonight, Trump gagged by a judge. He is barred from making statements about witnesses, special counsel, and court staff. The judge has decided that it wasn't falling under the First Amendment. This is all on the basis of, well, you are influencing the trial if you make public statements about a witness. I take issue with this because these trials are inherently political and, you know, they are much more political than they are criminal. And when you make these kinds of claims about a political actions having been a crime, you are entering a world of debate, a world of public, potentially public perception of it. And I believe that you should have the right that the Constitution basically clearly states that you should precisely have the right to come up with grievances. And one of these grievances is, hey, I'm being subjected to a witch hunt by our own criminal system. And to illustrate that witch hunt, I believe that the First Amendment fully protects the idea that, hey, this judge is a Democrat, or hey, this judge is a is someone who has been donating to the Democrats before, or here, this witness has been friends with Obama. All of these things are needed for the proper political process that is this prosecution to at least give a form of due process. So due process, not in the in effect, but a due process in being heard by the public, and the public being able to make their idea of whether fairness has been achieved here or not. So I believe it's all this modern conception that, oh yeah, anything you could say about a witness will intimidate them. I don't think it's fair to say this. I don't think it's true. And I think a lot, we see this also in family court. You know, the idea of, oh, well, she is traumatized because he was abusive and therefore he shouldn't be asking questions to her in the court when she does her testimony. But we're denying fundamental rights here of a right to interrogate, a right to critique, a right to expose publicly. All of it are fundamental rights of due process, in my view. And so bad decision by the judge, but not surprised she's a leftist. Dot says, JF, have you heard of the Hare psychopathy checklist? And would you consider scoring yourself on it to see how psychopathic you are? I'm convinced that I'm pretty high on the psychopathic scale. I didn't hear about the... Well, I heard the name. I heard the name of it. I know about this checklist, but I've never run the test. Maybe I can run the test tonight and maybe do it live if the results are funny. But I wouldn't be surprised that I am perhaps in the top 1% of most psychopathic minds on this earth. I am a good man, okay? I am a good, good man, and I wouldn't hurt people. But you're lucky that I am a good man, because if I had it in me to hurt people, harm people, and kill people, you can be sure that I would deploy the most psychopathic methods for it. I am a man of surgical procedure and certainty in the movement and following of the rules and following of the codes. I would be quite the serial killer, my friend. We'll be right back.